Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host today, Mike Keyes. Today we have the privilege of pursuing a follow-up conversation with Eric Anderson, who has had extensive training as engineer and software expert. So he's had his feet into the world of technology and science-based technology, but he's also had some training as a lawyer. So Eric, these two fit together somehow coherently, don't they? Engineer, lawyer, or engineer and law?
I hope they do, yes. It's been an interesting ride. Thank you.
So what most recently, have you been practicing more engineering or law or management? Or what sort of work takes up your day-to-day professional life these days?
I have my fingers kind of in all three at this point. I was with a couple of major law firms up until a few years ago, and I'm more involved in the business side of things now with a couple of startup companies I'm working with. So one is on the hardware side, and one is very much on the software side.
Okay. Well, as we know, computers and laws and things like that are intelligently designed. So you live in a world filled with intelligently designed objects and ideas. But you're also interested in how this plays out in the study of biology as well.
So absolutely.
In our last conversation, you brought up a criticism of the inference to intelligent design in biology that is sometimes raised that, well, there's information in everything, in ice crystals and the arrangement of rocks on the seashore or Saturn's rings, which we talked about in detail. So if there's information in every physical object, then it really is of no great significance that there's also biological information. And you nicely deconstructed this argument by showing that it's conflating two things.
I think everyone kind of at a gut level and even an intellectual level recognizes that there's something unique and special about the information in DNA as opposed to something like the rings of Saturn that we talked about last time. Part of the problem is that when this criticism comes up that there's information everywhere, the design proponent will occasionally try to defend the importance of information in biology by saying, yes, there's information in Saturn's rings, but the information in DNA is blank. And then you're left to try to fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Are we arguing that there's more information in DNA? Is that what we're trying to say? Are we trying to argue that it's of a different quality?
Right.
Is there some other characteristic to distinguish? And so what happens if we don't carefully think through the issues is that we get to the point where we're kind of floundering to explain the distinction. And so what I'm trying to focus on is highlighting the difference and making clear that there's not information contained in physical objects by their mere existence.
Right.
But rather the information is produced by the investigator, the intelligent agent. So that's kind of just to put a summary on that.
And the investigator, of course, is interacting with the objects out there and observing them, maybe performing experiments or interacting with these objects through instruments or directly through sight, smell, touch, etc. But you're saying by interacting, the scientist is establishing a relationship with an object but creating information that wouldn't exist if it was just the object sitting there in space, right?
Exactly. It's the information that's created by the intelligent being that only comes from that intelligent being. Not from the object itself.
Right, okay. And so there's a second response that you'd like to make to the criticism of design, and what would that be?
So the other point is that in addition to this conflation, which is really critical, you know, someone digs in their heels and says, you know, I refuse to accept that distinction. I think there's information everywhere and everything. It really just becomes a semantic game at that point for the opponent of design, and here's why. If we think about the example we had of Saturn's rings and DNA, we can, as an intelligent observer, analyze both of these. Even if we don't know anything about how DNA works, anything about the genetic code, we could turn our microscope onto DNA, just as we would turn our telescope onto Saturn's rings, and we could learn a lot about DNA. We could figure out its construction,
right,
its size, its shape, its physical characteristics. But in DNA, we also have the additional fact that there is information contained in DNA. There is a symbolic representation of something outside of itself.
And that was what was discovered back in the early 1950s. Watson, Crick, and a number of other scientists, they were describing this molecule, and they found out, they started to speak in terms of code, and they got to the point where they actually cracked this code. So
yeah, and it wasn't just an analogy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, what's so astonishing about biology, contrary to the great scientific discoveries of physics and chemistry and all of the information that humanity has produced about the universe, the astonishing thing when it came to the molecules of life is that above and beyond whatever information we could produce about their physical characteristics, we discovered there was a whole realm of information contained in those biological systems. And that makes them utterly unique, contrasted with everything else in the universe, galaxies and stars and planets and Saturn's rings and everything else.
So there's actually two layers of information, the scientist creating it and also the information in the object itself, in the case
exactly.
of biological information.
Absolutely. And so then the question, the incredibly profound and deep question that needs to be asked by every objective seeker of the truth is, what do we make of the fact that there is information in biology and not just that we can analyze and describe physical characteristics of biology?
Now, engineers also, they don't just describe objects, they actually create objects that are information rich, that have certain functions, right? And
absolutely.
You want to draw a parallel between that and biology?
Well, there's an interesting information theoretical point that maybe we don't need to delve into a lot here. But one of the ways that information theorists think about information is as an exclusion of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can think of it in from the other side of the coin, which is to select from among a contingent set of possibilities.
So select among options, right?
Exactly. And the interesting thing is, if you look at the etymology of the word intelligence, it means precisely the same thing, which is to choose among a set of contingent possibilities. And so at some level, and this I think is really profound, at some level the entire exercise of being an intelligent being, is the production of information. I mean, that's kind of your primary role, is to choose between contingent possibilities, exclude certain possibilities, and you produce information by that, whether you're writing an article or you're producing a new computer system.
You know, Eric, a really great point you made in the previous podcast that I'd like to reassert here, because I think it applies many different definitions of information, which is true, but the really interesting information for much of science and for daily life is this complex specified information. You just said, if you look at the etymology of the word information, it has within it the very nuts and bolts of how we make the design inference about the presence of complex specified information, doesn't it? That is, selecting among options, or the results of an intelligent agent having selected among options to make a flagellar motor or to make a computer program or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, the very etymology of the word intelligence goes to that very point. Okay. And that's why we're able to detect it, by the way. That's precisely the theoretical basis on which we're able to detect design after the fact.
So what's the next step in interacting with the design critic on this really interesting topic?
Well, there's one thing that I wanted to flag, and that is that, again, we need to really be careful about how we view this information. So if we have a design critic who is really digging in their heels and saying, hey, you know, I disagree, I think the information is everywhere and everything, I think for the most part we can get everyone to agree that there's something unique, something special. Everybody has both a gut feeling and an intellectual sense. There's something different about what's in DNA than in Saturn's rings. And so even if we took for argumentation's sake, the view that, yes, there's information out there in the universe and everything, we would still have to say then, all right, but what we're interested in, and certainly what we're interested in for the evolution intelligent design debate, certainly what we're interested in for origin of life studies, is the type of information, this complex specified information that we find in something like DNA. And so we can just make up two different terms. We could say, all right, there's information type one and there's information type two. And fine, if you think there's information type 1 everywhere, then what we're interested in is information type 2. Let's now move on and have a productive discussion about where that information may have come from.
Right. By just bifurcating the information landscape into two, of course, we know that there are many definitions of information besides complex specified information, even though we've already made the point that's really the most interesting kind of information for science and daily life. So information type one, really, it's kind of a placeholder for, well, fill in the blank. You know, there's a lot of different competing definitions of information, but they fall short of being the really interesting one that's so important for science. So, yes. So yeah, where do you want to take this next, Eric?
Yeah, I think that's really key. And I would just add that, you know, for someone who thinks that information is sort of out there everywhere and everything, that really becomes useless in terms of trying to identify information. You know, if it's everywhere and everything, then that's doesn't help me distinguish between a rock and DNA, right, in terms of its information content. And so as you mentioned, that's really not helpful.
Yeah. In a broad sense, I mean, some of these very esoteric discussions in the philosophy of information have very narrow application that is interesting, but it's not really going to apply to the most interesting questions about where did life come from, what sort of processes were in operation to bring about the origin of life or the origin of the major kinds of life.
Yep, so that's right.
Now, we are running up against the end of our time here in our second podcast. Let's wrap this up and summarize what progress we've made. The main point that you were making in this podcast, as I heard you, Eric, was that even if someone is not convinced about your first point about the conflation between description of an object versus the object itself and the alleged information in it, you're saying the really interesting kind of information is the kind of information that scientists create. And in the physical sciences, they're creating information about Saturn's rings. But in biology, scientists not only are creating information, they are also detecting complex specified information in the objects of biology themselves. And so that was the main point you were making, and that intelligence resident in scientists involves this choosing among options. It's in the etymology of the very word intelligence. Is there any other summarizing points you'd like to make to fix in our listeners' minds the main points of this second podcast?
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. I would just add that the main point in purposes of debate, if you're in a situation where you're talking with friends or family or somebody who brings up this kind of an idea, is to home in on the fact that regardless of whether they take a view that there's, you know, information somewhere out there and everything, it really is not relevant to the discussion that we're having in terms of origin of life or origin of DNA or those types of things in biology that we're interested in, which, as you mentioned, is the complex specified information.
All right. Well, thank you, Eric, again, for another interesting chat about not just the idea of information, but how it plays out in the actual practice of science and engineering. It's nice to draw from your experience in engineering and computer programming, and also your experience as a lawyer, one who looks carefully at the structure of arguments. So thanks again, Eric, for joining us on ID the Future.
My pleasure.
This is Mike Keyes with ID the Future. Join us again for other interesting conversations on the topic of information, both biological and non-biological. It's out there, and it's also in the minds of scientists who create the information. Great stuff, and come back and listen to more about this topic. Thanks for joining us.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.